resistance group Hamas during the Al-Aqsa flood operation. Israel's brutal war on the Gaza Strip enters its 47th day as the death toll from the regime's genocidal war surpasses 14,000. And also in our headlines, Hamas says that it has agreed to a four-day humanitarian truce in Gaza, which includes exchange of prisoners with Israel and entry of aid trucks. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. Our top story for this half hour, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the Israeli regime has been knocked out in the Palestinians' Al-Aqsa flood operation. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says Hamas, as a resistance group and not a government or a country, has succeeded in knocking out the occupying Israeli regime. The leader made the remarks during a meeting with Iranian athletes on Wednesday. Israel has carried out new airstrikes on Gaza. Despite a truce agreement, five Palestinians are killed in the attacks on the Jabalia refugee camp in the northern strip. The latest footage shows plumes of smoke rising in the sky over northern Gaza hours after the warring sides agreed to the truce mediated by Qatar and Egypt. Wednesday marks the 47th day since the Israeli regime launched its war on Gaza. Residential buildings have been the main target of Israeli warplanes and artillery. Hospitals are not spared from Israeli bombardments either, with Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City being the hardest hit over the past couple of weeks.
They are bombing all around the hospital, and they are digging in many areas within the hospital, Christian parts. It's again that you think are in a war area with lots of tanks, a lot of troops all over the time. What's happening now that they are totally very, very aggressive with the medical staff here, and they keep pushing us hardly and arresting us, each one of us, for a few hours.
The health ministry in Gaza says Israel has been targeting hospitals in order to displace those who have taken shelter over there. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization has reported the killing of one of its employees alongside her family members in Gaza. French medical charity Doctors Without Borders also says three medics, including two of its own, were killed in a strike on Al-Auda Hospital in northern Gaza. The group says it was horrified by the incident. More than 14,000 people, mostly women and children, have been killed in Gaza since the war began. Well, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has confirmed the humanitarian truce in Gaza. It says a four-day truce mediated by Qatar and Egypt includes exchange of Israeli captives with Palestinian prisoners held by the regime. Hamas says 50 Israeli captives, all women and children, will be released in exchange for the freedom of 150 Palestinian women and children. Under the agreement, hundreds of trucks of humanitarian aid, including fuel and medicine, will be brought to all areas of Gaza. During the truce, the Israeli regime should stop arresting or attacking anyone all across the besieged territory. Qatar and Israel have confirmed the agreement as well. Qatar says the starting time of the truce will be announced within the next 24 hours. It also says the deal is subject to extension. Dasher Shannon is joining us now from Khan Yunis in southern Gaza with all the latest from the situation on the ground. Ashraf, please bring us up to speed. There were also reports of another Israeli attack that has resulted in the death of at least a dozen Palestinians, which took place earlier today.
Yes, but the Israeli attacks did not stop at all since the beginning of this war. Almost every minute and every hour, there are casualties, there are fatalities, there are injuries. Throughout the night, Israeli forces killed and maimed over 100 people. And today, over a dozen people have been killed and dozens more were wounded, as the Israeli regime has intensified the attacks following the talk about the truce that's supposed to take place tomorrow at noon. People here in Khan Yunis, inside the Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, where tens of thousands are currently here as internally displaced persons, as well as those across the street and around the hospital inside UNRWA schools, are pinning their hope for some sort of relief tomorrow. That they're hoping that maybe the 4 days of of the cessation of fighting will give them a chance to bury their dead, to look for their loved ones under the rubble, because some 6,300 people are still under the rubble missing. And their families are extremely worried about their fate. Some of them have lost hope finding them. Some of them say at least we want to find them to order to bury them. They don't want to leave them under the rubble. Tomorrow at noon, according to this latest statement by the Israeli regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who said that the truce should go into effect around noon tomorrow, following the release of some 50 women from at least 50 women that are held captive, Israeli women held captive in Gaza, while 150 Palestinian prisoners, female prisoners and children, will be released from the Israeli prisons. Basically, the conditions of their truce is as follows. In the northern part of the Gaza Strip, there will be 6 hours of no Israeli Air Force presence in the skies of northern Gaza, while as far as the southern part of the Gaza Strip is concerned, 4 days there will be no Israeli Air Force presence in the skies of the southern part of the Gaza Strip. The Israeli regime will let the Egyptians allow some 500 trucks, aid trucks, to come in through the Rafah crossing. They were saying that the aid will also go to the northern part of the Gaza Strip, but that's not clear yet. They also will open a safe corridor for those who want to come to the southern part of Gaza, but no one will be allowed to go back to the northern part of the Gaza Strip. Well, a lot of people here in Khan Yunis and in the southern part of the Gaza Strip, they want to go back and check on their homes and check if some of the relatives are still alive who were bombed inside their homes in the last few weeks. This while UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, says that there is heavy pressure on the UNRWA services, because over the last few days, tens of thousands of IDPs have made their way to the southern part of the Gaza Strip. And already the services and resources of UNRWA have been exhausted from some 1.7 or 1.6 million Palestinians who moved south from the northern part of the Gaza Strip. People throughout the Gaza Strip have no electricity for more than 43 days now, no running water. Sewage system has completely collapsed. The health sector has completely collapsed. Regarding the health sector, for example, in the northern parts of the Gaza Strip, there is no health services whatsoever. So there are like 4 ambulances left there, because many ambulances were bombed and destroyed, and others don't have any more fuel to run. And even ambulances, when they try to pick up the dead or the injured, they get attacked by the Israeli tanks and Israeli snipers. So completely, the health sector in the northern part of the Gaza Strip has been shuttered. It's not working. As far as the southern part of the Gaza Strip, we're talking about Deir el-Balah, Nusrat, Khan Yunis, Bridge, Maghazi, and Rafah, and Khan Yunis, of course. There are only 3 remaining hospitals. The biggest one is here, Nasser Hospital, where I'm standing right now. It has no medication, or antibiotics, or even anesthesia for surgeries.
Ashraf, why has this round of Israeli aggression and war on Gaza been so heavily focused on the health sector?
Well, it's not only the health sector. It's all sectors, basically, but they concentrate on the health sector because Israel alleges that hospitals in Gaza are home to the command centers of the resistance, which is untrue for sure. But in general, Israel want to transfer, and this term transfer is an Israeli or Zionist term in the beginning of Zionism, that they need to transfer the population, the Arab Palestinian population, from the land of Palestine outside and replace them with the Jewish people. And this thing is going right now as we speak. They're trying to push the people south as much as they can, closer to Egypt. We are in Khan Yunis right now. Egypt is less than 20 kilometers, maybe 15 kilometers from here, you are in the Sinai Peninsula. They want to make sure that Gaza, by the end of this war, will be unlivable. They don't want the Palestinians in Gaza, 2.3 million, if they remain 2.3 million after nearly 20,000 deaths, to find nothing to live on. No food, no drink, no trees, no water, nothing, no electricity grids, nothing to live on. So if you were in their shoes, you would rather go to somewhere where you can live. So basically they're pushing us all the way south, as much south as possible towards the Sinai Peninsula.
All right, thanks a lot, Ashraf Chanda, joining us from Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. We're now going to bring in political commentator Hamid Reza Ghulamzadeh, who's with us from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Mr. Ghulamzadeh, welcome to the program. Let's start off with recent comments made by leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has said that the Israeli regime has been knocked out by the Palestinians. The Israelis are down for the count following the Al-Aqsa flood operation. Please walk us through those statements.
Thank you very much for having me. Yes, exactly right. You see, for more than 1 month, nearly 2 months, we have been actually witnessing the brutal attacks that the Zionist regime has been imposing on the people and civilians in Gaza. And Ashraf was just reporting on the casualties, damages, and all the things that has happened in Gaza. The final result is that they have no other choice but to accept the ceasefire. And neither of the objectives that they had set from the beginning is actually met so far. And it will not be met, of course, in the future either. The point is that at the very beginning, they said that we are going to demolish Hamas and we are going to actually destroy them totally and comments like that. It has not happened at all. And they have not actually succeeded to provide any documents that they have seized the tunnels or something like that. They have failed to provide any documents about all the claims that they have made. And they have left more than 14,000 people killed, and most of them children and women and all civilian casualties. So this actually is has nothing to claim any win or any success for the Zionist regime. So because of that, we can just look at the facts and the realities on the ground, that a group of activists, a political group, which has been under actually a lot of pressure and all the blockades and such things, for many long times, has managed to attack the Israeli regime in defense of itself, and has imposed actually has inflicted some failure to the Israeli regime, and they have not been able to do anything. The only thing that the Israelis have achieved is damaging their own image and to reveal to the whole world that how brutal and ruthless they are, and that is the outcome of the all the campaigns and the military attacks that the Zionists have been doing in recent days and weeks.
Thanks a lot. Political commentator Hamid Reza Ghulamzadeh joining us from Tehran.
Thank you very much.
Now, four more Palestinians have lost their lives in yet another Israeli aerial raid on a refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. Reports say at least six Palestinian resistance fighters were killed in a pre-dawn drone strike on the Tul Karm refugee camp. According to Palestinian sources, the Israeli occupation forces also prevented ambulances from reaching the spot. The Israeli strike came as Palestinians keep resisting the Israeli incursion. It began late on Tuesday. The sources said Israeli snipers were stationed on nearby buildings since the onset of the Gaza war. The Israeli forces have killed over 200 Palestinians and detained hundreds more in the occupied West Bank. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, earlier joined us with more details about the fresh Israeli raid on Tul Karm.
During this military operation, Israeli forces have raided the Tul Karm refugee camp with military jeeps storming this area, and soldiers had been attacking the people, searching the houses, and caused severe damage in the infrastructure and the narrow roads. The Israeli forces had also surrounded the hospital of Thabit Thabit and raided the vicinity of the hospital, and they had been checking the ambulances, and the soldiers had impacted at least one continuum wounded from one of the ambulances inside the complex of the hospital of Thabit Abed. And it seems that the Israelis, they had been carrying out their attacks, storming the hospitals in the Gaza Strip. And at the same time, in the last 2 weeks, the Israelis had stormed several hospitals and the emergency halls and the complexes of a number of hospitals in the occupied West Bank, in Jenin, in Nablus, and now in Tulsarim as well. We have to mention that before this operation, another Palestinian had been shot and killed by the Israelis in the village of Azzon in Qalqilya. Another Palestinian was shot and killed by the Israelis in the village of Azzon in Qalqilya.
At least five people have been killed in U.S. strikes on the positions of a resistance group in Iraq. Iraq's anti-terror group Kataib Hezbollah, in a statement, has confirmed the attacks on the Jorfa Sahar area south of Baghdad. The U.S. military claims the strikes were in response to Tuesday's missile attacks on its Ain al-Assad airbase. Iraqi resistance groups have carried out dozens of attacks on U.S.-run facilities in Iraq and Syria since the beginning of the Israeli war on Gaza. That's amid growing anti-American sentiment in the Arab country. Resistance factions in Iraq and elsewhere in the region have repeatedly warned the U.S. against funding and supporting the Israeli war against Palestinians. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says that it has carried out 10 successful strikes against Israeli military sites. In separate statements, Hezbollah said its guided missiles struck a target affiliated with the Israeli military intelligence known as the Military Assembly near the Manara settlement, the Beit Halal military base, and a contingent of Israeli soldiers hiding in the Avivim settlement also came under attack by Hezbollah. The Lebanese resistance movement says the intense strikes were in response to Israel's deliberate targeting of the media team of Lebanon's television channel Al-Mayadeen in the south earlier in the day. Al-Mayadeen's correspondent Farah Omar, cameraman Rabi Me'mari, and a contributor to the TV channel were killed in the Israeli strike. The regime has a long history of attacks on news networks and media personnel. Palestinian estimates say Israel has killed 65 journalists since October the 7th. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The ethnic cleansing of Palestine is inseparable from the racialized structures of Zionism, which receives unbridled support from Europe and the United States. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, Israeli regime leaders have declared their intent to conduct collective punishment and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians, with Israeli War Minister Yoav Gallant calling them human animals and vowing to eliminate everything. In his address, the ICC prosecutor made no mention of the textbook case of genocide, referenced by Greg Mokiber, a top human rights official, who recently resigned in protest over his organization's failure to take action. Instead, Khan reiterated the decontextualized Western misrepresentations of the Zionist regime's war with Hamas, in which Palestinians want no part, suggesting that thousands of Palestinian victims have been caught in hostilities as unfortunate collateral damage. In fact, the Zionist regime has been waging war on the Palestinian people for decades in an ongoing campaign to displace them from their land. With or without Hamas or Fatah, Islamic Jihad, and other resistance movements, the Palestinian people have been resisting the colonization of the land by Euro-Zionist settlers since the late 19th century. One of the earliest documented instances of Palestinian resistance occurred in 1886, when the Palestinian farmers of Meblis and Al-Yehudia refused to let their land be seized by Zionist settlers of Petah Tikva. Yusuf Al-Khaledi, a prominent Palestinian politician and former mayor of Al-Quds, perfectly foresaw the impending anti-colonial struggle. In 1899, Khaledi delivered a sharp warning to Theodor Herzl, the political father of Zionism, that the Palestinian people would never acquiesce to the Zionist aspiration to seize control and become masters of Palestine, but rather would steadfastly resist. Neither the ICC prosecutor nor most Western governments have shown any concern for the colonial history shaping present global conditions. The Zionist regime and its allies have made significant efforts to silence and suppress this history, going as far as to demand the resignation of UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres for highlighting that the Hamas attack did not happen in a vacuum. The reductive representation of the conflict as one between only the Zionist regime and Hamas aligns the parameters of justice with the official European and American political stance, thus enabling the unfolding ethnic cleansing and genocide. Such reductivism and dehistorization sidesteps the fundamental questions around the Zionist regime's settler colonial structures and the Zionist ideology that informs its violent practices towards Palestinians. These actions have been facilitated by active involvement or silence of international institutions since the publication of the Balfour Declaration more than a century ago. If anything, the events of October 7th have only underscored the fundamental roots of the conflict, namely Euro-Zionist settler colonialism, racism, and moves to eliminate the indigenous people of Palestine. As far back as 1895, Herzl prophesied that Jewish settlers must spirit Palestinians across the border, noting that this ethnic cleansing must be performed discreetly and circumspectly. Today, the Zionist regime, the U.S. and other European regimes have been explicitly deliberating over the potential displacement of Palestinians in Gaza to the Egyptian Sinai, while communities in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds have been enduring ongoing ethnic cleansing for decades, an issue that Jewish settlers are seeking to accelerate while the world's attention remains fixed on Gaza. The ethnic cleansing of Palestine is inseparable from racialized structures of Zionism, which receives unbridled support from Europe and the US. Ethnic cleansing and genocide are not spontaneous events. They are preceded by deliberate racial branding alongside special and military planning. The racialized branding that laid the groundwork for the dispossession of Palestinians in 1948, forcing hundreds of thousands into exile while destroying their towns and villages, endures to this day. The Zionist narrative regards all Palestinians as a demographic threat to the Zionist regime. This branding has been intricately linked with meticulous special planning, aiming to concentrate the Palestinian population into encircled and non-contagious enclaves in the occupied West Bank, Gaza, and bounded neighborhoods within the occupied territories. Although Palestinians constitute the majority population from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, they are denied their basic right to self-determination, and they are confined to around 15% of the land under various forms of Israeli regime rule, ranging from military occupation in the West Bank to siege and bombardment in Gaza. While calls to expedite the pace of ethnic cleansing have grown louder since October 7th, they were already circulating within the Israeli regime political and military establishment, with calls for a second Nakba and to wipe out Palestinian villages. The current onslaught against Gaza is part of this incremental genocide, a continuing catastrophe to which Palestinians have responded across the land with resolute resistance and steadfastness. It is essential to acknowledge the embedded colonial power dynamic within international law and institutions, which has actively shaped the global legal and geographical order according to Eurocentric racial distinctions and colonial interests, dispossessing indigenous peoples of their land and right to self-defense. Such distinctions are currently being used to rationalize war and ethnic cleansing in Gaza. These concepts persist in various forms and expressions. In the contemporary Western official perspective, the non-Western world exists in the jungle, as articulated by EU's foreign policy chief last year. Such descriptors are used not only in derogatory fashion, but also to achieve tangible objectives, to justify settler violence as self-defense, and to dispossess non-Europeans, deemed as primitive jungle dwellers, of their land and resources. Today, these very concepts are applied to Palestinians for the same reasons: to strip them of their land, legitimize genocide and ethnic cleansing against them, and deny them the right and means to defend themselves against Israeli settler colonialism. This morbid genocidal atmosphere has been intensifying with the direct involvement of Western regimes, which have ensured the necessary diplomatic conditions and provided weaponry, capital, intelligence, and media support for the Zionist regime. The U.S. and most European governments have continued to encourage Israel, even as its forces disregard the Geneva Conventions, because they know that such rules are generally made by and for the white man. As legal scholar Anthony Angi has noted, the basic structures of colonialism underpin all major schools of international jurisprudence. The entrenched Euro-colonial structure permitting the international order has enabled and licensed the disposition and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians since 1948. This is not a war between Israel and Hamas. Rather, it is a continuation of settler colonial violence aimed at uprooting the indigenous people of Palestine from their land.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Brutal war on Gaza is still raging after a month and a half, claiming the lives of more than 13,000 people, mainly children. Hospitals have turned into mass graves, and people have problem accessing essentials to survive. BRICS members, meantime, and some others have come up with proposals in their extraordinary meeting on Gaza today. And it seems that Qatar and Egypt mediated talks aimed at establishing truce are going to bear fruit soon. Now, is that a good omen? What's in the offing? Welcome to The Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. To begin with, let me introduce our guests in this episode. Masoud Chajar, chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission in Tehran. And Zainul Abidin Gaddafi, coordinator of the Zexaki Foundation South Africa, joining me from Cape Town.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to both the gentlemen. Let me begin with Masoud Chajar. Masoud, Iran and a few other countries have been asking for a unified stand and concerted action against Israeli crimes. The question I want to ask you is, this is what, of course, some other countries, a few countries have stressed, and they also agree with Iran. But what does it take for this to realize?
Well, bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. And the reality is that it's not just end of atrocities and genocide, which international community should seek, but addressing this sort of the largest genocide in our lifetime that we have really noticed unleashing in front of our eyes, on our television screens, and such a brutality needs to be addressed. Is, of course, the first thing and the most important thing is end of the this genocide. But I think unless we address the sort of those who committed this and bring them to some sort of justice, then what we are doing, we are not only not addressing the issue right now, but we are legitimizing this sort of behavior, which indeed will be totally unacceptable, and indeed I think will create problems in the future in the international relations, and indeed international law and how countries could or could not behave.
Mm-hmm. Now, Zainal Abidine, there are also talks of trying to take the war criminals of the Zionist regime to the ICC or a court of justice. How would that be possible? Iran is supporting this idea, stands with those who support this. So how could justice be served eventually? One day, is the ICC in charge? It has a jurisdiction, but so far, it, when you look at the past performance, you don't see much coming out of it.
Bring us on your show. Indeed, Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, is supporting the call to charge the or to take the issue of the criminal regime, incorrectly known as the State of Israel, to the International Criminal Court. We do realize that the Islamic Republic of Iran has consistently, since the establishment of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, supported all means and all avenues to bring about justice, to stand against the criminal enterprise of the illegitimate regime, and to support the oppressed people of the world, especially Palestine, as the central cause of the oppressed people. By this, the Islamic Republic has supported the Palestinians in terms of aid, politically, in terms of support, in terms of monetary support, logistical support for the resistance in Palestine, and by all other ways, including diplomatic means. And on this policy of the Islamic Republic of Iran to support the oppressed people of Palestine in each and every way, they are supporting an avenue, which is, of course, the call to have the ICC prosecute the illegitimate regime. However, we need to remain cognizant of these facts, that the illegitimate regime, number one, has never ever respected international law. They've always been in contravention of United Nations resolutions with regards to the Palestinian issue, and have shown a blatant contempt for any sort of peace and any sort of restorative justice for the Palestinian people. Number two, the Zionist regime is not a member of the ICC, and they have consistently been fighting against and arguing the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court with regards to the Palestinian matter. We also see that the ICC has only ever taken up 31 cases, of which all of those people that they've attempted to prosecute were from Africa, and never have they gone after the criminals in the Americas, in Europe, and the criminals of the Zionist regime. So this is an important call to support, and we acknowledge that the Islamic Republic support all methods to bring about restorative justice for the Palestinian people.
Right. Master Chajra, let's look at it from a broader perspective. The whole war, it's the 46th day already passed, in a few hours of the 47th day. So what has Tel Aviv achieved out of this? Its military campaign has failed. Hamas has been able to shatter all this, you know, the superficial facade of grandeur and so-called invincibility and military prowess. Its campaign of lies also failed. It's losing the trust of the public opinion around the world. People out there on the streets, you know, they know what Israel is doing to Palestinians. They want that to stop. And also the ground invasion, it dragged its feet so much. It threatened, I'll do this, I'll do that. Okay, they just embarked on the ground invasion. And again, they haven't achieved much. So up to this stage, is this not per se a victory for the Palestinian resistance fighters?
Absolutely. The thing is that they haven't achieved anything. If anything, what we are very clearly witnessing is that Israelis are exposed. Once and for all, they're really exposed right across the world. The public opinion, even in the United States and Europe, has turned against them in a way that has never happened before. And I think even internally, the divisions are very clear. And indeed, they will show themselves even more once the ceasefire happens. So, and also militarily, they have actually lost. because the illusion that Israel is occupied regime created was that they're untouchable, that they are number one in intelligent sort of apparatus and so forth. All those illusions are destroyed, and they are exposed. They're exposed as apartheid war criminals who are actually getting involved in killing children, destroying hospitals, hitting UN center, depriving people of water basic needs. And this has never happened in the recent years. And I think they have lost every level. So really, they haven't achieved anything. The victory is with the Palestinians. And I have to say, it's very sad that they have paid such a price for it. But right. They are victorious morally and indeed other ways.
Mm-hmm. Now, Zainal Abidine, in the same lines, I just wanted to ask your comment, because it's lots of dimensions to this, to what the Israeli regime has actually failed to achieve, and defeat on top of defeat and failure over failure. And they've shown their true color, like when the minister asked that, why not nuke people in Gaza and get rid of them all at once? So it made other states fear that, hey guys, they have their nuclear arsenals that they never came clean about. So they proved that they could be a threat to global security. Internal division and rift is deepening, as Masoud rightly mentioned. And intelligence, their intelligence failure, actually. The beginning of the Operation Hamas, Al-Aqsa Flood Operation, Netanyahu was saying, I was not informed about this. And is that a joke or what? Look at the intelligence. And even the EU is now saying, EU that's been backing the Tel Aviv regime and saying they're doing the self-defense, that's legitimate. Now they're saying, okay, he had a trip, Josep Borrell, for 5 days in the West Asia region. He was criticized by a large number of activists. He said, now, EU, we need to empathize with Palestinians, and we need to do more.
100%. The military failure, as well as the failure in all other fields of the Zionist regime, has been exponential in the current 46-day escalated aggression upon the Palestinian people. The fact that the Zionist regime were in a position where they thought and presented themselves to be at the strongest they've ever been. They had a normalization deal in place, and they were protected politically with the normalization with the various Arab states. They had the Iron Dome and other military equipment and other military matters in place to protect themselves. They were at the strongest relationship with the Biden regime, with the Biden administration in the United States, and the Zionist regime were at the most powerful position they thought they could ever be in. On the 7th of September, with the launch of Al-Aqsa Flood, all security, all measures, all intelligence networks and every means put in place by the Zionist regime was completely shattered, because they could not even preempt this military attack that was exercised with precision and excellence from the Palestinian resistance within the concentration camp called the Gaza Strip. Not only that, the fact that they've continued to kill more than 13,000 people, bombed indiscriminately residential areas, hospitals, schools, UN buildings, killed more than 5,000 children, stopped the basic necessities from reaching the Palestinian people, all in an attempt to re-establish that facade of invincibility. It proves their failure. And as the leader of the revolution, Imam Khamenei, just recently said that them going into hospitals, occupying hospitals, shows the defeat of the Israeli regime, because there can be no military excellence and precision in occupying hospitals that are there to support the innocent people. Not only that, the countries around the world are turning against them, even if many countries now are recalling their ambassadors temporarily to achieve a ceasefire. It is showing that the Zionist regime exposed themselves to the people of the world, to the governments of the world, and more on a daily basis. People are realizing the genocidal, murderous, illegitimate face of the Zionist regime. Therefore, they've exposed themselves. The resistance of the people of Palestine, their resilience and their patience has benefited them. And today they are in a position which, of course, shows that they are with the truth and that the enemy is being exposed.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Now, Masood, there is also this word around regarding a truce that's likely around the corner. You know, Palestinians have been saying since weeks ago that we are ready for prisoner swap. And also, and now let's first talk about truce, and then we'll come to prisoner swap. And this Egyptian and also Qatari mediated, let's say, negotiations, they're bearing fruit, and that's what both sides are talking about. So if this truce is established, would that not mean that Palestinians have been able to have their conditions met? And would it not be considered another victory for them?
Yes, absolutely. I think the fact of the matter is that what we have seen is being one of the most brutal and deliberate and genocide and to kill as many innocent people, as many sort of children, as many hospitals, as we discussed. And it hasn't had a sort of a military objective. We sort of see that, yes, they have committed the genocide. If genocide was the aim of this regime, then they are victorious because they have actually committed one of the greatest genocide of our time. But if it's anything else, either security or any other excuses that they have used, they have failed, and they have failed abysmally, and they have not achieved even a single one of those goals. And as I said, they expose themselves, and not just exposing themselves as genocidal, but also their supporters. I mean, you know, they drag United States and Europe leaders into sort of the same category. They are also as guilty of these genocide as those who committed it. So really, I think overall, it's a tremendous victory. It's overshadowed with the loss of so many lives, which it affects every single one of us. Watching and seeing these destruction of the innocent lives, but nevertheless is a victory, and is a victory for the Palestinians, and is a victory for those who support Palestinians. And it actually shows us that there is no longer the Israelis could go and claim this sort of false claim, the lies that they were using, and indeed they are exposed in a very tremendous way.
Right. Now, Zainal Abidine, South Africa hosted this BRICS summit regarding the situation in Gaza. Iranian president also had his comment, and he announced his country's readiness to support the idea of, putting the war criminals of the Israel regime on trial. And there were many other proposals, you know, severing ties, and you know what I'm talking about. And we have South African President Ramaphosa saying that the root cause of this conflict is actually the illegal occupation. So what can be done about this basic and the root cause of the problem? And what's the path toward resolution of the issue once and for all?
Yes, the statement by the President of the Republic of South Africa, President Cyril Ramaphosa, with regards to the illegitimate regime, acknowledging on a public platform within the BRICS that, of course, the root cause of the issue is the illegal occupation. This is a step in the right direction. This is a good step that it's not only the same rhetoric that is coming from the Islamic Republic and from countries like Syria, but it's coming from a dispensation like South Africa, that we need to recognize that the core root cause of the issues in the Middle East and of this genocide is the fact that there is an illegal occupation of Palestinian land. Now, this matter can be taken forward. We need to then ask, if the root cause is the illegal occupation, which part of the occupation is not illegal? And of course, the simple part is, the simple answer is that every part of the occupation, every part of the existence of the Zionist regime is illegal. It is an illegal occupation, a usurpation, and a military aggression on the people of Palestine. It is therefore the call which is supported by the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is the call to support the resistance of the Palestinian people and the resistance of the people of the region, and that is the removal of the illegitimate colonial entity. Only once the land is returned to the respective owners, we are speaking about the 1948 land where there was no Zionist illegitimate entity establishing themselves incorrectly as a state, only then we can say that the illegal occupation has ended, that the restorative justice is given back to the people, that Palestinians of all persuasions are allowed to return to their land, and that the Palestinian people themselves, without a military occupation or any occupation of any sort, can determine their own future and their own sovereignty. And therefore, we support the call of the Islamic Republic of Iran to support the resistance and the armed resistance of the Palestinian people to fight and to attain their liberation.
Okay. And Masoud, I want your comments regarding the same question, because it's really a main question. It's been lingering on for more than seven decades now. The question is the solution to this once and for all. Some countries are saying President Trump pushed for a so-called deal of the century. No regard for Palestinians, only one-sided deal. Palestinians said this is a stab in the back. And then we have some other countries still pushing for the so-called two-state solution. Now Tehran's saying that let's hold a referendum. Let's have Palestinians decide about their own fate. Even Palestinian expatriates and the diaspora, they should have their own fate in their hand. So let's have your opinion on this.
I mean, it's very, very clear that the sort of the two-state solution is only an illusion to sort of keep alive the illegal occupation and an apartheid system. Both illegal occupation and apartheid has got a legal definition under international law, and they both have to be removed. And you can't remedy apartheid and illegal occupation by just massaging and trying to reform it. It has to be removed. It was removed in South Africa and therefore created an environment where blacks and whites and others could actually live together and begin a sort of a future. It's the same thing here. We have to remove the illegal occupation. We have to remove this apartheid system. And then we are beginning to find a solution. The two-state solution has been just an illusion, which was deliberately used and abused to expand the occupation, expand the apartheid system, and expand this brutal abuse day in, day out against the ordinary Palestinians, not just in Gaza, but in West Bank and everywhere else. So, yes, no reform. It has to be removed. Removed and replaced by what the majority people want, so therefore a referendum. That makes such a common sense that for anyone who wants to find a solution, all other solutions, including or illusion, including two-state solution, is really an excuse for a status quo.
Okay, I appreciate your contribution. Masoud Chajar, Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission in Tehran, and Zainul Abidin Gaddafi, coordinator of the Zakzaki Foundation South Africa in Cape Town.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
An-naqi means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdaa al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malaa.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed imam must have the most knowledge and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world.